How are you?
Okay, before we start the actual Chumash, let's try to give an introduction to the concept of Torah, Chumash, what it's really all about.
Tanya. When you want to start,
I know what you're talking about, but I guess, okay. Now, Torah is, we mentioned last time, the Medrash says, Torah is the blueprint of the world. And the Zohar uses the expression, Istakel Baraisa, God looked into Torah and created the world. Now, when this concept of Torah doesn't only begin from Bereshis, okay? Number one, we know that there's the written Torah and there's the oral Torah. When God gave the Torah, He didn't give two Torahs, one oral and one written. There was one Torah given, half of it is written, part of it is written, and part of it is oral. The 24 books of Tanakh, as it's called, Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, or as it's called, the 24 books of Scriptures, that's called the written Torah. According to Jewish law, the written Torah is not allowed to be said orally. In fact, it's a halacha, even in Shulchan Aruch, that you can't say it orally unless if it's parts of Torah that everybody knows by heart, like parts of davening that we say from Tillim, or things like that. Otherwise, halacha does say you really shouldn't be saying the written Torah orally. The oral Torah is not allowed to be written. This is from the biblical sense of the word. The Torah was given in two parts, oral, written and oral. The written Torah is the 24 books of scriptures. The oral Torah is the explanation of everything else of Torah.
But it's written down.
What? I understand that. You want to have patience?
Yeah.
Be a doctor. So, the oral... I didn't say anything yet. The written Torah is not allowed to be said orally, and the oral Torah is not allowed to be written. Okay? The Gemara says, the Talmud says, that therefore, the oral Torah was not written in a public forum, meaning it wasn't allowed to be officially written. People were able to take private notes for themselves in the oral Torah that they shouldn't forget it. In the days of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, which was after the destruction of the Second Temple, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was a very wealthy man. He was the undisputed leader of the entire Jewish nation. And he realized that people are beginning to forget the oral Torah, because it wasn't written. You don't have it written down. And there was a lot of Jews were in exile. It was after the destruction of the temple. The Jews were in exile. Things were getting worse. People didn't have the ability to sit and memorize and remember, and the heads were not what they used to be. Bottom line, Rav Yehuda Nasi quoted based on Pasuk in Tehillim. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, Eis lasis l'ashem heifedu teirasecha. There comes a time for God that you have to nullify the Torah. In other words, as Rambam uses the analogy to explain this, that sometimes you need to amputate a hand or a foot, God forbid, to save the life of the person. So even though you're amputating a leg or a foot, God forbid, or something like that, but nevertheless, sometimes you have to do it to save the entire life of the person. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasi realized that we might have to amputate the law, so to speak, of not writing down the Torah, because if we don't amputate it, meaning if we don't write the oral Torah, there won't be any Torah. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi compiled what was called the Mishnah, which was, he gathered all the scholars of his time, and everybody discussed it. I don't want to get into this whole, exactly the evolution of it, but the bottom line is, at that time, the oral Torah became permitted to be written down. Yeah, people shouldn't be forgetting it. But until that time, there was halacha that oral Torah is not allowed to be written. Okay? So this is the two halves of Torah. Now, when it comes to Torah, as the commentaries explain at great length, the lay people look at a massive building. Okay? We see a finished building. But in this building, behind the walls, in the walls, is millions of miles of wiring and this and that and bricks. I mean, in the setup of a building, you know, for the lay person, all they see is a building. But you know, when you start building the building and you're in construction and you're an architect and you're a builder, so then you know all the details, the plumbing and the electricity and the million things that you don't see. These are all part of the finished building. Now, the layperson doesn't see all that. They just see the finished product. And the same thing is in Torah. Torah, behind the scenes of Torah, there's the so to speak, the wiring and the plumbing and the bricks and the cement and the whole plan of the world. Torah is that plan that God created the world with. In other words, as we will learn in the first opening sentence, Bereshis Baro Lekim, Bereshis, and we're not starting the pasuk yet, Beis Reshis, two things are called beginning. Bereshis simply means in the beginning. But Beis Reshis means two things, Beis, two things are called Reshis beginning. Torah is called beginning, Jews are called beginning. So the pasuk is saying, Baro Elokim, why did God create the world? Because of the two things that are called Beis Reishis, for the two things that are called beginning, meaning for the Jews to observe Torah. When the Jews observe Torah, that's the purpose of why God created the world. So Torah itself is the intricate details of the entire existence of the world, but the world means universe, not earth. The entire universe. Torah encompasses the entire universe that God created. Torah is called Torah Od. Ner Mitzvah. A mitzvah is called a candle. Torah is called Od, light. What does it mean, Torah is called light? We're discussing this morning by Chassidus before davening. Light doesn't change the room. You have a room full of stuff. Whether there's a light on or a light off, whether the room is lit up or dark, does not change the room. It's exactly the same thing. Light doesn't do anything to the room itself. All light does do is it shows you what's safe, what's dangerous, what's good, what's bad, and you can see where you're going. Okay? So if you have, for instance, a world, which is full of stuff. You have a lot of dangerous roads, hazards, pits, dangerous cliffs. Who knows what you have? And you have safe places. What does Torah do in the life of a Jew? Torah is the constitution of life, meaning Torah that God created the world because of is the light that sheds the guidance for a person to know what is right, what is wrong, what's good, what's bad, what's, you know, proper, what's moral, what's immoral. This is all what Torah does. Torah has four basic parts to it. Okay, let's go do things. There is the body of Torah, and there is the soul of Torah. Just like a person has a body and a soul, what's the difference when you see the body of the person versus the soul of the person? The body of the person is revealed. You see it. You see the body of the person.
Physical.
The soul, what?
Physical.
I'm talking about the physical body of the person, you see. The soul of the person, the spirituality of the person, that you don't see. So basically, when you talk about body and soul, you're talking about revealed and concealed. Just like in a human being, which is a microcosm of the universe, the person is called Olam Katan, a miniature world, and therefore the Talmud says whatever there is in the world, you have within the person. There's plant, inanimate plant, animal, and human. You have the same thing in a person. You have water in the person, which is inanimate. Then you have plant, the hair that grows is the plant life in the person. The animal, you have the animalistic temptations of the person. You have the human aspect, of the human element of a person. Everything that exists in the world exists within the person. Now, therefore, in Torah, there is the body of Torah, and there is the soul of Torah. The body of Torah means the revealed parts of the Torah, meaning the tangible parts of Torah that we understand. Like Chumash, Gemara, it speaks about objects, it speaks about paper to make Chumash, it speaks about leather to make tefillin, it speaks about wax to make a candle. Those are tangible items. That's called Nigla, the revealed part of Torah. Then you have the esoteric parts of Torah, the mystical parts of Torah, the Kabbalistic parts of Torah, the Hasidic parts of Torah. Those are the inner depths of the Torah. They're not so tangible because you're talking about God, and God is not a tangible thing that you can tap into in a physical sense. So Torah has the spiritual part of it, the esoteric part of it, the Kabbalistic, the mystical part of Torah, and then you have the revealed part of Torah. In a more detailed way, there is Pshat, the simple meaning of Torah. It's called Pardes. Pshat, Remez, Drush, and Sod. Pshat means the simple meaning. Okay? You take a sentence in Chumash, in the first pasuk, in the beginning, God created heaven and earth. Okay, that's the simple meaning of the pasuk. Then you have Remez, which is called the hints of the Torah, meaning numerical values, acronyms, comparison of words, exchanging of words. That's all called the hinted Remez of Torah. Drush is the homiletical part of Torah, the way we derive one din from another din, from this law, from that law, this case, from that case. And then you have Sod, which is called the secrets of Torah. That's the mystical part of Torah. Okay, so even in Torah itself, you have many different aspects of Torah. You have the revealed, the hidden. You have, again, the simple meaning, the hinted meaning, the homiletical meaning, the mystical meaning. These are all different aspects of Torah that need to be defined. Now, Torah itself, and this is where we're going to get into soon with the Beis, why Torah begins with the Beis. Even in Torah itself, Torah says about Torah, "Kihi chachmaschem uvinaschem le'enei ha'amim." Torah is the wisdom for all nations. What is Torah? The wisdom of God. The wisdom of God. That's what Torah says Torah is. Torah is Chachmasa Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's the wisdom of God. If it's the wisdom of God, just to analyze this correctly, if it's the wisdom of God, and everything that exists in the world comes from God, that's what we believe, everything that exists in the world is coming from God. And if, therefore, if there's wisdom in the world of medicine and science and law or well, any wisdom, if it comes from God, from which aspect of God does it come from? From God's wisdom. Right? If everything comes from God, so all the wisdoms in the world comes from God's wisdom, which is Torah. So therefore, not only is Torah the wisdom of God, and therefore, as the commentators point out, you have in Torah unbelievable agriculture, unbelievable mathematics, unbelievable animal things, unbelievable things, because Torah, which is God's wisdom, is the source of every single wisdom that comes out. It's very logical. If everything comes from God, where do wisdoms in the world come from? From God, from God's wisdom. Which is God's wisdom? God's wisdom is Torah. Okay, so everything comes from God. But that's not what Torah really is. Okay. Torah is not only the wisdom of God, which the sentences say. Torah is the wisdom of God. But there's another aspect of Torah. And the Medrash says, and a very interesting statement, what is Torah? It's God's toy that he plays with. That's what the Medrash says. Torah is God's Shashuya Melech Batzmusay, meaning it's the toy that God plays with himself. Now, what does it mean, a toy? Obviously, God doesn't... obviously not literal. Playing represents enjoyment, pleasure, which is higher than wisdom. Wisdom is already the capacity, the intellectual capacity of the mind. But pleasure and willpower are above the concept of wisdom. Ultimate tainug, pleasure, is the like we learned in Chassidus, is the level of yechida, the essence of the soul. The essence of the soul, which is one with the soul. The essence of God, which is one with God. That's the deeper aspect of Torah. In other words, from one aspect, Torah is the wisdom of God. But in a deeper sense, Torah is really the essence of God. And therefore, when a person studies Torah, they actually connect to the essence of God. Okay? And again, you can elaborate on this years. But we're going to start learning Chumash, and things are going to come out more and more as we go into this. Okay, the first pasuk. Oh, what, just one more thing. Oh, you know what? Oh, no, we'll wait until we learn that pasuk. What? Yeah?
What you mean by you don't sing the written Torah orally? Isn't that what we're doing right now?
No, it means you don't start saying. You don't sing Tillim by heart. You don't sing Chumash by heart. You don't sing Tanakh by heart.
But you can read it.
Yeah, reading, you're reading it, and you're not saying it by heart. By heart, not from the print, from memory. You're not supposed to say the written Torah orally. That doesn't mean if you're reading it, then you could read it. You're not saying it orally. Okay. I mean, in English, you're saying with your mouth, so it's called orally, but it's not by heart.
Like you should read the Shema.
Right. Well, Shema is something because everybody knows it. You could say it by heart also.
But didn't the Rebbe also say that certain things you should like say, know by heart? When
yeah, because those are things that everybody knows, so therefore, it's halacha says it's allowed.
Is that why Rebbe emphasized reading from the Seder?
That's why the one of the reasons why the Rebbe emphasized he's supposed to daven from a siddur. The truth is, it's like Shemoneh Esrei is not from the scriptures, so it's not part of Tillim. Yeah, things like that you're supposed to say from the print. Yeah. What?
Tillim is also the same.
Tillim is one of the 24 books of scriptures. Yes, Torah should accept.
So that you should be reading it rather than remembering.
Saying it by heart. Again, but those chapters of Tillim that everybody knows because they're in davening, those you could say by heart. Okay. Now, the pasuk begins, and again, we'll just begin it, but Bereishit Bara Elokim es haShamayim vaHaaretz. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. Okay? The Torah begins, obviously, with the Beis, which is the second letter of the Aleph Beis. A lot of the commentaries ask you, Shalmi asks, why doesn't the Torah begin with an Aleph, after Aleph is the first letter of the Aleph Beis? So why doesn't the Torah begin with an Aleph? So it says in the Talmud Yerushalmi, very interesting statement that demands explanation. All the letters of the Aleph Beis came before God and said, start the Torah with me. And God found something wrong with each letter. It came the letter Aleph, first letter of the Aleph Beis. It says, hey God, you know, I'm the first letter to begin with me. God said, well, I don't want to start with an Aleph. Because Aleph is the first word of Arur, which means cursed. I don't want to start the Torah with the letter Aleph, because Aleph is the first letter of the word Arur, which means cursed. I'm going to start it with a Beis, because Beis is the first letter of Bracha. Blessing. So why should I start the Torah with an Aleph, which is, okay? Now,
why not
one second. So, Yushalmi says, the Aleph came with a complaint. Said, listen, I have first rights. So God said, you know what? Okay, I'll make you feel good. The Ten Commandments begins with Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am God, your God. Aleph is the first letter of the Ten Commandments. So God said, okay, you know what? I'll begin the Ten Commandments with you. Make you feel good. There's an interesting story in the Gemara. There was a Greek king called Talmai HaMelech, and he wanted to prove to the Jewish people that Torah is not real. So he took 72 elders, this is what the Gemara says, he took famous Gemara. He took 72 Jewish scholars into separate rooms. None of them knew of each other. Okay? And he told them to translate the Torah into Greek. What did he think? He said, no two people are going to translate it the same way. And they'll be able to prove, you see, you all have different interpretations. It's not real. Okay? So the Gemara says, a miracle happened that all 72 translated Torah exactly the same way. But there was a catch to this. They made 10 changes. They made 10 changes in the text of the Talmud, of the Chumash. Why? Because, again, none of them knew of the other 72. I'll give you the first example was, it says over here, Bereshis Bara Elokim. So how's it translated in English? In the beginning, God created. But if you translate it literally, Bereshis Bara Elokim could mean Bereshis created God. You can misinterpret it that Bereshis, whatever that is, Bara Elokim created God. So we translate in the beginning God created. But if you take it literally, Bereshis, Bara Elokim. Bereshis, whoever that is, Bara Elokim created God. So each one of the 72 scholars said, I can't do Bereshis, Bara Elokim. So each one of them changed it to Elokim, Bara Bereshis. And there are 10 changes. One of them, for instance, later on, which we'll get to, it says, let us make man. Na'asa Adam, let us make man. And they said, if they translated, let us make man, that means God's talking to another God, let us make man, so there'll be duality. There'll be diversity. There'll be two gods. So they said, E'asa Adam, let me make man, instead of let us make man. And each one of them, of the 72 scholars, made the exact same changes. Okay? Based on that, when they translated the Torah, how did they translate the Torah? Elokim Bara Bereshis. So then the Torah begins with an Aleph. Elokim Bara Bereshis. Then the first letter of Elokim is an Aleph. So Elokim begins the Torah. Okay? So there is this Aleph Beis competition. So this is what this says in Yerushalmi. The Rebbe explains a very interesting concept. Why does the Torah begin with a beis? Because if you think about it, there's a lot of bad words with beis, and there's a lot of good words with aleph. You know, just because aura or curse begins with an aleph, but there's a lot of good words with an aleph. Even Elokim, God's name begins with an aleph. I mean, and beis, you can have a lot of bad words to begin with a beis. Like, what's the... So the deeper meaning that Rebbe explains over here is, when a person begins learning Torah, they need to know its base, its stage two. Stage one is God's Torah. Then you can begin learning the base, the actual learning. In other words, why is the Torah beginning with a base? Because the Torah wants to teach us that when you begin learning Torah, you begin learning Chumash, you should know that's the second part. There's a prerequisite to learning. What is the prerequisite of learning? That it's God's Torah. And therefore, like we learned many times, if it's God's wisdom, then when I don't understand something in Torah, it's not, it doesn't make sense. It's, I don't make sense. In other words, if I can't understand it, it's not because Torah is wrong. Because if it's God's Torah, then the question is not why I don't understand. The question is, how could I understand anything in Torah? How could a finite mind understand God's infinite wisdom? That's the question. Not why we don't understand. The question is just the opposite. How in the world could we understand? If it's God's wisdom, it's impossible to understand it. What?
How long did it take from the time that they said, you know, it's the oral Torah, and the rabbi came and said, okay, we have to now write it down. How long was it from Moshe's time to that time?
40, 369, 811, probably close to 1700 years.
And how are they 100% sure that this word that just traveled from one mouth to another, because it was never written, right? It was...
No, the written Torah was written.
No, not the written. The one that they say is
oral.
It's from oral.
Right.
How are they sure that what 1,700 years down it came was the...
Because what's interesting, the same Talmud we have in L.A., is in Europe, and in South America, and in South Africa, and all over the world.
No, I mean at that time.
At that time, I'm saying. All the sages of the world, at that time,
they
gathered together, and they ironed everything out, and they spoke, and they debated. And but even what they came up with at the end was also given to Moses at Sinai, meaning the entire oral Torah was given to Moses at Sinai. If you remember, we mentioned a number of times in different classes, there's a famous story, in fact the commentators bring it out here in their introductions to the whole concept of Chumash. When God gave the Torah, okay, Moshe went up to Mount Sinai, correct, to get the Torah 40 days and 40 nights. When he went up there, he saw God was putting, you know, well, I don't know if the women are going to know this, but if you ever look in the Sefer Torah, there's crowns on the letters. There's crowns on the letters. So Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Mount Sinai to get the Torah. He saw God putting crowns on the letters. Whatever that means, but take it at face value. So Moshe said to God, what are all these crowns? What are all these crowns? So God said to Moshe, one of your future disciples by the name of Rabbi Akiva is going to learn hundreds and thousands of laws from these crowns. So Moshe said to God, show me that guy. So God said, okay, go backwards. Go into a time machine, whatever. They came into Rabbi Kiva's class, and the Gemara says Moshe Rabbeinu sat in the 18th row, pretty far back. Okay? Rabbi Kiva said something. Moshe Rabbeinu never heard it. Okay, Rabbi Kiva was teaching Torah. Now, don't forget, Moshe got the entire Torah Mount Sinai. Rabbi Kiva says something of Torah he didn't know. Okay? It's like, you're teaching, Einstein's in the room and you're teaching relativity, and Einstein never heard it before. I mean, it doesn't make sense. So one of the students, so Moshe Rabbeinu says his face darkened and he felt bad. So one of the students said to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi, how do you know this? How do you know this? So Rabbi Kiva answered him, it was given to Moshe at Sinai. Halacha l'Moshe Mitzvah. This is what he answered him. It was given to Moshe at Sinai. So the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu felt good. Got it? Now, the story makes so much no sense that it's, okay? First of all, it's like, what, Moshe Rabbeinu, a little baby? He doesn't know something. He feels bad. He hears his name mentioned. Oh, okay, got a gold star on the chart. Okay, I feel good. I mean, come on, what are you talking about, Moshe Rabbeinu? Not... And if Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know it, and Rabbi Kiva, and all of a sudden Rabbi Kiva said it was given to Moshe at Sinai, like, so why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu know it? Okay? Now, the written Torah is 24 books, right? Torah, Nevi'im, Miksev. There's an exact amount of letters, exact amount of words, exact amount of sentences. Right, when you have something written, you have exact amount. And there are books that record exactly, you know, how many words there are in the entire Tanakh and so on and so forth. The oral Torah, because it's not written in a form, is infinite. It can keep going. You can have a debate and discussion and a discourse and you keep going forever. What Moshe Rabbeinu got in the oral Torah, when the oral Torah was given, were generalizations, general rules. Okay? But from these rules, the Torah teaches us how to derive law after law after law. We say before davening, right before davening, that be a shmol eimer. Right, and then the people say the mourner's kaddish before davening begins. The 13 ways which the Torah is derived. 13 ways you can derive Torah. In other places, 24 ways. There are different methods of learning Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was told a general rule. Okay? Now, you take that rule, you can learn a million details from that rule. And the applications of that rule into the details. Correct? So what Moshe Rabbeinu got at Mount Sinai was the generalization of all the rules. As generations went in the evolution of the world, evolution of Torah, so the rabbis started expounding based on those rules which were given of how the Torah needs to be explained, and learned that they had all these million details. Therefore, the details Moshe Rabbeinu was not necessarily aware of. But that detail is not something outside of what Moshe Rabbeinu was taught. It's part of what Moshe Rabbeinu was taught.
I just wanted to say, like, the interpretation of the Torah 2,000 years ago...
It's the same interpretation today.
No, it is the same, but how the people around conceive it is a totally different...
Because it was handed... No, what's up? The reason why it's conceived differently and understood differently because people are not going by the guidelines.
But do you think that...
One second. In other words, especially the Rebbe didn't like to classify Jews. You know, today... It's Orthodox, Reform, Conservative, Reconstructionist, this, that, a million different, right? Okay. We don't classify Jews. A Jew is a Jew. Okay, more observant, less observant. Okay. But just for clarification purposes, the word reform means to change. Correct? So what they're basically saying, just by their name, we are changing the Torah to fit our modern day needs. Okay? Truth cannot be altered. If it's true 1,000 years ago, it was true 10,000 years ago, it's true, there's no 10,000, 78. It's true 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 30 years ago, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago. Truth cannot be changed. And therefore, when Torah is derived based on the guidelines that the Torah says Torah could be explained and learned, so then it's true. even though you can have different opinions. Because the different opinions are the application of the Torah to the appliances today. So, in other words, so the details of Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't necessarily learn or didn't know. But Rabbi Kiva said to him, what I derived this detail is based on the teachings Moshe was given at Sinai. So Moshe Rabbeinu then said, oh, so it is all coming from Sinai, it's just the way you derive it, and that they didn't, impossible to know infinite amount of details. To give you, we mentioned this many, many times. It doesn't say, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know, okay, about driving a car on Shabbos. Trust me. Moshe Rabbeinu did not know, and God didn't tell him on Mount Sinai, whether you could or not drive a car on Shabbos. Or whether you're allowed to do a heart transplant. Or whether surrogate motherhood is allowed or not allowed. Or you name it in the technological fields and, you know, in anything. Okay? Moshe Rabbeinu was not told any of that. So now, Torah comes along and says, for, let's say, you're not allowed to drive a car on Shabbos. Correct? Now, it doesn't say that in the Torah. It doesn't say that in the Talmud. It doesn't even say that in code of Jewish law. It doesn't say you didn't have cars in those days. Okay? So how can Torah tell me that when I go to the moon with the Tesla in the spaceship, yeah, how do I keep Shabbos on the moon? How do I put tefillin on in the moon? How do I, or any of these zillion issues that come up. But the truth of the matter is, each and every one of these issues are discussed in Torah. Just to explain a few, a lot of them we explained at great length in different times. A lot of medical procedures, okay, a simple one because it's clear. Okay, let's talk about surrogate mother, yeah? You know what surrogate mother is? Somebody donates the eggs and the other mother woman carries it, yeah? Okay, so now the question is, who is the mother? So it doesn't matter what science says, because that's what people decide, okay? So now the question is, what did God tell Moses at Sinai about a surrogate mother? Who is the mother of that baby? Okay? Or, what did God tell Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai to know if a heart transplant is allowed or not? Obviously, he didn't have heart transplants. But, when you understand concepts, okay, then you understand that Torah defines, Moshe Rabbeinu was given on Sinai the definition of death. He wasn't told about heart transplants. But Moshe Rabbeinu at Mount Sinai was told by God what the definition of death is. Because even in the medical scientific world, you have different opinions. Is it brain death? Is it respiratory death? What is the criteria of death? Right? So you have a secular court that can rule what the definition of death is. But that doesn't mean it's the real definition of death based on Torah. Correct? Now, it's understood, you're not allowed to kill somebody to save somebody else's life. Correct? You can't kill somebody a minute earlier even to save somebody else's life is going to live 30 more years. You can't, because you can't kill anybody. Okay? Now, when the person's donating a heart, I'm not talking about the recipient, I'm talking about the donor, how can they take, you can't take out a dead heart. Dead heart you can't transplant, right? You just take the guy's heart and do whatever you do. You can't transplant a dead heart. Right? So now the question is like this. In order to take the heart for a transplant, The heart still has to be working. How does medical science, legal system, allow you to take the heart from a person to give it to somebody else? So the answer by them is very simple. They also say you can't kill somebody to save somebody else. But they say the definition of death is brain death. Therefore, as soon as the person is brain dead, the heart is still functioning. Respiratory is after brain death. Okay? So therefore, in the legal system, brain death is death. Therefore, they right away take the heart, they keep it going until they transplant it into somebody else. Correct? Now, but if Torah rules, based on guidelines given to Moshe, that brain death is not considered death, respiratory death is considered death, right? Then you wouldn't be allowed to do a heart transplant. Because then you're killing the donor, and that wouldn't be allowed. Correct? So, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have to be told about heart transplants. Moshe Rabbeinu could be told the definition of death, and based on that, we can extrapolate what would be the law. Can you do a heart transplant, brain transplants, we'll never come up with one day, or anything else. Understand? If Torah gives guidelines, because it's a very interesting question, who is the mother of the baby? What makes the mother a mother? Is it conception? Or is it carrying it and giving birth to it? This is a medical dilemma, and it's a halachic issue. Okay? Who is the mother of the child? Or I'll give you another example.
What does Torah say?
One second. It's not halacha class. I'm just bringing out the way... Okay.
Now I'm curious.
Okay, good. Or you have, for instance, artificial insemination, right? A man doesn't have the ability to produce semen to give birth, so they take semen from somebody else and put it into the woman, and, yep. Now, would that constitute a mamzer? A bastard? Is that an illegitimate child because you're taking somebody else's sperm and putting it into a married woman, let's say? Does that constitute the concept of a mamzer? So that's the halacha question. Is it a mamzer? Is it not a mamzer? Now, was Moshe Rabbeinu taught about artificial insemination? No. But there is a story in the Talmud, by the way. A man went into a bath and he ejaculated sperm, and a woman went in. Don't ask me to read, but this is what the Talmud says, an actual story that happened. And a woman went in after him and she became pregnant from his sperm. There's a whole discussion in the Talmud what the story is. Okay? So, halacha doesn't have to define what artificial insemination is. But Torah could define the definition of what a mamzer is. Does it have to be actual intercourse? If it's not actual intercourse, it is a mamzer, not a mamzer. But Torah, those details were given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai. Okay? Can somebody listen to the Megillah and Purim through a telephone? Through a microphone? Right? Okay, a lot of shows do microphones, because it's a big crowd, and they want to hear the guys, they use a microphone. Now, was Moshe Rabbeinu taught microphone? 100% not. But Moshe Rabbeinu was taught a law, that based on the law, knowing the law and the scientific concept, then Torah makes a clear ruling about a microphone. Torah says, about shofar blowing. Okay? Torah says about shofar blowing. This story in the Talmud discusses this. If somebody is blowing shofar in a pit, and people heard the voice of the shofar in the pit, okay? Or if you go to a valley where there's a tremendous echo from the mountains, okay? So the Talmud discusses, if somebody blows shofar, and people heard the echo, So the Talmud says, and this was given to Moshe at Sinai, if you hear the original voice of the shofar blowing, it's good. If you hear the echo, it's no good. Okay? Now, what do you see from that concept given to Moses at Sinai? In order to fulfill your obligation, you need to hear the original sound. Right? If you hear an echo, it's no good. Correct? Now, extrapolated to a microphone, which Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what it was. Everybody knows, not everybody, many great rabbis didn't know how microphone worked and telephone worked. They were misinformed, so they made incorrect rulings, not because they didn't know how to learn, because they didn't know how the telephone worked. But everybody that knows any minimal amount of science knows that when you talk into the phone, your voice becomes mechanically reproduced through the wires, and it comes out on the other end as a mechanically reproduced voice. That means, did you hear the original voice? No. Because it's a mechanically reproduced voice. So based on that, Torah rules, you cannot listen to the Megillah on Purim through a microphone or a telephone, because it's not the original voice of the sayer. Right? So, Torah didn't talk about microphones and telephones and surrogate mothers and all that, but Torah gave guidelines for everything that exists in the world, how to apply it into the practice. And therefore, based on this, God said on Mount Sinai, yeah, that you cannot listen to Megillah on a telephone.
If this was me,
you would have gotten yelled at.
Yes.
I don't yell at men.
Was that said at Mount Sinai?
Huh? That was said at Mount Sinai too. Don't yell at me. Okay, it's not relevant the point. I'm just saying. Okay. Surrogate mother, I'm not saying because it's more complex and there's, in contemporary halach, there's two opinions. Some say the mother is the one that carries it. Some say the mother is the donor. And therefore you have to be stricter in both ways.
Medically, it's the carrier.
But no, again, that's...
No, it's not the carrier's way.
You're saying in terms of secular law? Or is she saying medically?
You're talking about the right who's...
It's the egg of the mother, so it doesn't belong to that carrier.
Right.
The carrier...
That's because... No, one side. That's because they have a legal contract that I'm giving it to you. It's like an adoption.
You pay for
it. It's like an adoption. But adoption is not the biological child. It's a contract that says I'm giving you the child. But who is halachically the biological child, the mother of the child? And you know what difference that makes? If it's not the legal mother, let's say the carrier is not the mother of the child. Okay? Right? Can that child, what's the relationship between, like, for instance, a woman can't touch a man, right? So is that mother, if she carried the baby, but if it's not halachically her baby, she can't be alone in a room with him and she can't touch him and hug him and kiss him. There's a very important, besides inheritance, and not only that, can he marry that woman's sister? Forget about age difference. I'm thinking hypothetically.
Yeah.
If that woman is his mother, right? Can he marry that woman's sister? No. But if it's not his mother, he would be allowed to marry her. There's a lot of halachic ramifications and differences of what the law would be. But coming back to this point where we got way off, and that is, and that's why it takes 18 years.
Said it at Mount Sinai.
Moshe Rabbeinu was told every aspect of Torah that could possibly be in any age and any time. Okay, I'll give you one more example and then we'll move on. The Meralmi Prague made was called the Golem. You know, this guy that Meralmi Prague made?
Yeah.
But he couldn't talk. In fact, rabbis, Rava made a golem. There's cases in the Talmud that they made this person.
What did you say, rabbis? What? They also made it?
So, yeah, Rava made it. The Gemara says, we learned it in sin. Huh? No. It's one, the famous one of the golem that the Rami Prag made. But there are other golems that the rabbis made in the Gemara. For whatever reason. Okay? Now, the question is, that golem that the Rami Prag made, can he count it for a minion? You're right. No, but it's not so simple in Aloch that you can't. It's a discussion. Okay? I'll give you another example in also modern day things. Can you clone a person? According to Torah, are you allowed to clone a person? Cloning?
Yes.
Huh? Tell her in Farsi.
Don't know. Cloning. First is called cloning.
Yeah, go ahead. Like half of modern day Hebrew is English. Yeah.
Genetic and engineer person.
You take the stem cell from this guy and make like, you know Dolly the sheep?
Yeah, that's
Dolly the sheep?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Have you heard Dolly the sheep?
Yeah, that's it.
She died already, Nebuch, but, okay, anyway.
That's interfering with God's will.
But according to Jewish law, would cloning be allowed? By the way, the answer is yes. The question is only, what status that person that you're cloning, and this is not decided yet in Halacha, by the way, to my knowledge. The question in Halacha would be, what would that status of the cloned person be? In other words, would he be Jewish? And if yeah, would he be able to count it for a minion? Not count it for a minion. What's the definition of a person? So the question, what is a person? Okay? But Torah defines in very different places what the definition of a person is. Based on that, you can understand if you, but that was all given to Moshe at Sinai. All those rules. So what?
On that note, I have a question. Now that you're talking about that, how about like when they make corn, like out of,
Is that
a question that was
ever
asked, if that's okay to do that?
It's for sure okay to do it. The only question might be what bracha you make on it, but that's a separate issue.
And a health reason.
Would you make adamo, would you make shahakol? That's a whole different question. But yeah, for sure you could do it. By the way, just for the record, one second. What?
Tampering with Hashem's like natural order of creating his...
Okay, people, let me ask you a very simple question. How many of you have ever been to a doctor?
Yeah, medicine.
Oh. Isn't that mixing into God's business?
Hashem told us to go to a doctor.
Oh. So what does Hashem tell us to do? Mix into my business. Did you ever give tzedakah to a poor person?
I hope I did.
Okay. Are you mixing it to God's business?
Yeah, but he also told us to.
Oh, what is God telling us to do?
I don't know if he's telling us to modify corn.
No, he's telling us mix into my business for the betterment of the world.
But they say corn isn't good for you when it's modified.
Oh, Hakachani, quit your health stuff. Don't you. Chocolate cake, you can modify. Ice cream, you can modify. Talk corn. She's worried about corn. From all the things in the world, she's worried about corn.
She's an example.
Okay, I got it.
Everything
by the way, the whole concept of creation, God fit in, can't learn the whole Torah on one foot. It's going to take 18 years, but God made an unfinished world for us to finish it. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. The Medrash says, God created an unfinished world and our mission is to finish the world. So, you're right. The Talmud asks the question, by the way, because there are many religions that don't believe you're allowed to mix into doctors and all that. You're not allowed to do all these things because you're mixing into God's business. But the Gemara says, how do we know that a Jew is allowed to go to a doctor's? Because in Parshas Mishpatim that we read a few weeks ago, it says, V'rapa yirapi. The Torah says, if you hurt somebody, you beat them up, you have to pay 5 damages. And one of the 5 damages, the Torah says, is verapo yirapi. the doctor heals him, and you have to pay the damages for the doctor bills, right? If you beat somebody up. So the Gemara says, Mikan, from the fact that the Torah says, that the doctor should heal him, Mikan, from here we learn, the Gemara says, Shenitein Roshus L'Reifa L'Rapis, that a doctor was given permission to heal. Meaning, by the way, without those two words in the Chumash, Virapo Yerape, hypothetically, it would be forbidden for a Jew to go to a doctor. Because you're mixing into God's business. The Apikratus asked Rabbi Akiva, the non-believer, the heretic, asked Rabbi Akiva, if God loves the poor people, and he tells you, you give money to him, right? So why didn't he just make him rich? In other words, it's again the same question. Why are you mixing into God's business? Because the answer is, God wants us to mix into his business. Not in evil, not in questioning what God does, but God wants us to mix into his business to better the world by things that we do. What?
So just one more question on that. So does the Torah not tell us things that are obvious? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so you might not be sure if you should go to a doctor.
No, Torah says go to a doctor.
But how about things that are obvious?
Like what?
Like that you should go to work, you should eat, you should take care of your... Like, are those obvious things told also in the Torah?
Yeah. Ushmartim leid nafshisechem. You have to take care of your health. Sheishishamim ta'asem lachtecha. Doesn't mean 6 days you're allowed to work. 6 days you must go to work. Work is creativity, not physical. Creativity. Torah, there's no obvious.
Everything.
Everything. Torah tells everything.
Even things that seem obvious, like you're hungry, you know to eat. You know what I'm saying?
But a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't take care of their health.
But there's... Aren't there certain things, though, just as a human being that you know?
Or yeah. Really? Yeah. So those either the Torah says, or the Torah says it's because I'm telling you to be a human being and to be healthy, so you have to do A, B, C, D.
So it doesn't leave any stone unturned.
Torah doesn't leave any stone unturned. You know why? Because God created the world, and his Torah is the blueprint of the world. There is nothing in the building that's not in the blueprint. Okay, we didn't get too far today, but...